All right, let's jump into another deep dive today.
Yep.
And we are going to be focusing on this Massachusetts legal ethics case, Messing, Rudofsky, and Willicke, PCV president and fellows of Harvard College. And as a law student, that's kind of a mouthful. But this is a really important case for understanding how discovery works, particularly when you are dealing with organizations as the opposing party.
Absolutely.
So have you had a chance to look over the materials?
Yeah, I have. And I think it's a really fascinating case. You think about all these ethical rules you learn about in law school, and they can seem kind of abstract, but when you see them play out in a real world scenario like this with real world consequences.
Huge consequences, like big money involved.
Huge.
I mean, that's when it really sinks in. So I guess maybe let's just start with the basics, kind of lay out the facts of this case, and what happened.
Sure. So we've got this law firm, MRW, okay?
MRW.
And they're representing a sergeant, a police sergeant,
Okay.
in a gender discrimination case against, you guessed it, Harvard
Ashford.
and Harvard's police chief.
Right.
Now, during their investigation, MRW decided to have a little chat with five employees from the Harvard University Police Department.
Okay.
So we're talking two lieutenants, two patrol officers,
Okay.
and a dispatcher.
Got it.
Just some informal conversations, just trying to get a feel for things. But the problem is,
Yeah.
these were ex parte communications.
Without Harvard's lawyers knowing.
Exactly. Without Harvard's counsel being present or even giving their consent, which
Right.
is kind of a big no-no.
Yeah, you can't just go around the opposing
It's
counsel with you.
that's the whole point of having ethical rules to make sure that everybody's playing fair.
Right.
And it all boils down to Rule 4.2 of the Massachusetts Rules of Professional Conduct, which is all about communication with someone you know is represented by another lawyer.
Right. So obviously, these Harvard employees are represented by Harvard's lawyers as part of this whole case, so they can't just go around and have these informal chats with them. So I'm guessing Harvard was not happy about
No,
that.
they were not happy at all.
I wouldn't be happy either.
They argued that MRW had totally crossed the line, violated Rule 4.2.
Okay.
They wanted sanctions, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
So they actually filed a complaint with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination,
Okay.
which, it's a bit of a mouthful. So
I'm glad.
MCAD, there you go.
Okay.
And surprisingly,
Yeah.
MCAD actually agreed that MRW had screwed up.
Okay.
They said, yeah, you violated the rule, but they didn't impose any actual penalties.
No,
It was
true.
more like a slap on the wrist.
Okay. All right. So, like we said, abstract ethical violation and no real consequences. So, whatever.
Well, not quite. So later on, MRW moved the discrimination case to Superior Court,
Okay.
standard procedure. But here's where things got interesting.
Yeah.
Harvard saw their chance.
They're like round two.
They said, okay, new court, new judge, let's try this again. They went back after MRW demanding sanctions.
Okay.
And this time, the Superior Court actually sided with Harvard.
I said, yeah, you violated it.
They said, you know what, MRW, you really messed up.
Uh-oh.
They agreed that Rule 4.2 had been violated,
Okay.
and the consequences were
Yeah.
not pretty.
Not a slap on the wrist anymore.
No, not at all. First off, the court said that MRW couldn't use any of the information they got from those five HOPD employees.
Those affidavits.
No affidavits, no testimony, nothing.
Right.
And
No.
to make matters worse,
Oh, no.
they hit MRW with a hefty bill,
Okay.
ordered them to pay Harvard's legal fees and costs
How much are we talking?
over $94,000.
Wow.
$94,418.14, to be exact.
You have a good memory for numbers.
I try.
Oof, that's a lot of money.
That's a serious chunk of change.
So not so abstract now.
Suddenly those ethical rules have some real teeth.
Right. So MRW appeals, right?
You bet they appeal. They take it all the way up to the Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC,
The big dogs.
top dogs in Massachusetts. And this is where things get really interesting
Yeah.
because the SJC actually overturns the Superior Court's decision.
Whoa.
So they're saying, hold on, let's rethink this whole Rule 4.2 thing.
Right.
Now, this is the part that's super important for law students
Okay.
because the SJC sets out a new framework, a three-part test
Okay.
for figuring out which employees of a company
Right.
you can't talk to
Right.
without the company's lawyer present.
Okay, so give us the three parts.
All right. First off, you can't talk to employees who have the authority to make decisions for the company regarding the lawsuit.
Like a CEO or something.
Yeah, someone high up who can bind the company legally.
Okay, makes sense. Number two.
Number two, employees who are actually managing the issue that the lawsuit is about.
So not just any manager.
Right. Not just someone with a manager title.
Right.
They got to be directly involved in the stuff that's being sued over.
Got it. And number three?
Number three. This one's a little tricky. Employees whose actions could get the company in trouble.
Okay.
Legally speaking.
So if the company could be held liable for what this employee did or didn't do.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes sense. So the SJC is saying, look, you can't just ban lawyers from talking to any employee.
Right.
You have to be specific about which employees are actually off limits.
Precisely.
And they also rejected Harvard's argument about this whole vicarious admission theory, right?
That's right. Harvard was trying to say that Rule 4.2 should prevent lawyers from talking to any employee whose statement could be used against the company in court.
Okay.
But the SJC said, no, that's going too far.
Yeah.
Rule 4.2 is about protecting the attorney-client relationship.
Right.
Not about shielding companies from potentially bad evidence.
Interesting. So how did the SJC apply this new three-part test mm-hmm. to those five HUPD employees that MRW had talked to?
Well, they basically said that none of those employees fit into any of the three categories.
Okay.
The lieutenants, even though they were supervisors, weren't really in charge of the specific issues related to the gender discrimination claim.
Okay.
And the patrol officers and the dispatcher were just witnesses. They didn't have the power to bind Harvard or anything like that.
Right, right. Makes sense. But I thought there was a little bit of disagreement, even within the SJC itself. Didn't one of the justices write a separate opinion?
Yeah, you're right. Justice Cordy agreed with the majority's decision.
Okay.
But he wrote a concurring opinion where he expressed some concerns, specifically about the lieutenants.
Okay.
He thought that in some cases, lieutenants, because of their supervisory roles, might actually fall under that second category, the one about employees who are managing the issue in question.
Interesting. So even within the court, there's this recognition that it's a tricky balance.
It's a very fine line.
Trying to protect the company's interests, but also making sure that the other side can gather information.
Exactly.
So for our listeners who are law students,
what
are the key takeaways from this case? What do they really need to know?
I think the biggest thing is to understand that three-part test.
Okay.
Because when you're out there practicing law and you're dealing with a company on the other side,
right.
You need to know who you can and can't talk to without getting into ethical hot water.
Yeah. And you can't just go by job titles.
No. Titles can be deceiving.
Right.
You really have to dig deeper and figure out what the employee's actual role is in relation to the lawsuit.
Okay. So focus on the function, not the title.
Exactly.
And it's important to remember that Rule 4.2 isn't a blanket ban.
Right.
You can still talk to some employees. You just have to be careful.
You got to be smart about it. And document your reasoning.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, if you think an employee is fair game, write down why you think that, just in case you ever have to defend your actions.
Right, so it's all about being prepared and knowing the rules of the game.
Exactly.
So to sum up, Messing v. Harvard is a really important case for understanding how Rule 4.2 applies to companies.
It's a game changer.
The SJC set out a clear three-part test for figuring out which employees are off limits. For ex parte communications.
Right.
And they rejected a broader interpretation that would have made it much harder for lawyers to gather information.
Exactly.
So law students, pay attention. This case could really impact your future practice.
Absolutely.
And on that note, here's a final thought for our listeners. How might this ruling in Messing v. Harvard affect different types of cases? Like, would it play out differently in a product liability case versus an employment discrimination case?
It's a really good question.
It makes you think about the broader implications of this decision.
It does. It really highlights the ongoing tension between protecting the attorney-client relationship and making sure that everyone has access to the information they need.
Right, because ultimately the goal is fairness and justice.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for diving deep with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll catch you next time.
See you then.